In good times and in not so good times, it can be helpful to remember that we live in a global economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 16th day of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And we begin today with me reading a list of countries and you trying to guess what they have in common. You ready? All right, here we go. England and Mexico, Canada, Argentina, India and South Africa, Australia, and oh yeah, us. This is another one of those, and yes, I know I do this to you all the time, but you ain't never going to get it, so I'm just going to give it to you. It's a not even complete list of the countries whose central banks are raising rates to deal with inflation. And for all that it feels like it is the worst here, well, Jay Powell talked about exactly that yesterday.
It's not just here. In fact, we're sort of in the middle of the pack, although I think we have, of course, a different kind of inflation than other people have. And partly because our economy is stronger and more highly recovered.
Reading between the lines on the Fed chairman here, which is, as I see it, our job, what he's saying is that every country's economy is different. And as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, some of them might be more vulnerable to inflation and thus conceivably recession than we are.
There are global forces driving inflation in pretty much all economies, and they're really hard to tame with interest rates alone.
Pressures on commodity prices like energy and food, largely driven by Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
That's Joseph Gagnon at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
COVID shuts down factories, creates problems in the shipping industry that affects many countries.
But there's a big difference between the U.S. and many other countries. We had such massive government stimulus to businesses and households that we've recovered to pre-pandemic employment and GDP. Gagnon says others haven't been so lucky.
Europe and Japan are not back to the previous level of employment or output.
Europe's also got an even bigger problem dealing with inflation in oil and gas, because unlike the U.S., it produces hardly any of its own, says Michael Pierce at Capital Economics.
American consumers complain about paying $5 for gas, but the energy squeeze in Europe has been a lot more severe, including on households' energy bills.
All that means, as central banks hike interest rates to try to fight inflation, Europe and other weaker economies are closer to tipping into recession. The risk is even higher for poor countries. Many depend on grain exports from Russia and Ukraine, says Columbia political economist Sharon O'Halloran.
Africa and the Middle East are always on these knife-edge situations. So these types of disruptions can be very significant.
The U.S. has one other big advantage globally, says Jay Hatfield at Infrastructure Capital.
The rest of the world follows the Fed. So whenever they raise rates, the other countries are really forced to do it to defend their currencies.
That preeminence means capital will keep flowing into the U.S. from weaker economies, and the domestic economy might just be able to avoid tipping into recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, I would say they were selling it into the close, which they were, by the way, never really a good sign. But honestly, they were selling all the live long day. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The setup for this next story begins with this. We are in, and honestly have been for a while now, we're in a rising interest rate environment. Even before the Fed actually started raising rates, they were talking about it, and that talking has had some impact in, just for instance, housing. Regular listeners to this program will remember that a month or so ago, we told you there were some signs that the housing market was maybe kind of sort of starting to cool off a little bit. And this week, more signs. Housing starts and building permits for May came out this morning, both down, although those numbers, we should say, are notoriously volatile. But also, mortgage rates are way up, 5.78% for 30-year fixed right now. That is double where it was last year. And both Redfin and Compass have announced layoffs. The Redfin CEO, in fact, saying, and this is a quote, "We could be facing years, not months, of fewer home sales." Marketplace's Samantha Fields is on Housing for us today.
Say you've been looking for a house for 6 months. When you started looking, mortgage rates were around 3%, and you figured, I can afford a $300,000 mortgage. But today, with interest rates closer to 6%,
the extra monthly payment could be about $600 or $700 more now, just compared to December of last year.
Lawrence Yoon at the National Association of Realtors says that means a lot of people who felt they could afford to buy a few months ago maybe can't anymore.
The higher mortgage rate have greatly shrunk the pool of eligible buyers, and naturally, home sales are declining.
With fewer people buying, houses are starting to sit on the market a little longer. Some sellers are reducing their prices. And
we are starting to see a little bit more inventory coming online today.
Allie Wolf is with the housing data and consultancy firm Zonda.
And I think that's because investors and flippers and people that want to sell at the top, or at least what they perceive to be the top, are starting to say, you know what, it makes sense to put my home on the market right now.
Still, Wolf says there's just not nearly enough housing out there, especially for low and middle income buyers.
We're in an environment right now where we're going through a historic affordability crunch. And if we can't either get wages to increase dramatically from where we are today, or we don't see more housing come to the market, you're going to see housing transactions slow almost by default.
That piece of the housing market puzzle is not so new, says Barbara Fields at Apt Associates.
We've had a decade of underbuilding, and there's just not enough stock for everyone who wants to buy, particularly this very large millennial generation.
And she says it's going to take a while and a lot of investment from government and the private sector to change that. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
We talked retail sales yesterday, down 0.3% April to May. And when we on this program think retail, we think of our mall manager, Alana Furco. She runs the Butte Plaza Mall out in Montana. And we got her on the phone to see how things are going right about now. Hey, Alana.
Hi, Kai. It has been a while.
It has been a while. And we've been making the rounds of regulars. And we said, you know what? We have to call the Butte Plaza Mall and talk to Alana. How are things?
Things are awesome and amazing. I mean,
really?
they're a lot better than the last time we visited. And I just have to say personally, thank you to all the good people who reached out. And my heart, it just overflowed with all their goodness and their good wishes.
Well, I'm glad people reached out to you, because that was a rough phone call you and I had. But things are better now. Tell me about it.
So, you heard of a little production called Yellowstone?
I have, yes. I don't even know what network it's on, but yes.
Okay, well, they had a prequel to Yellowstone called 1883.
Yeah.
And there is a sequel of 1883 called 1932.
That's a lot of dates, Alana, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, it is, but people who know will understand. So the production of 1932 is going to happen here in Butte, Montana.
Wow. And so do we expect to see Harrison Ford and who's the, it's Helen Mirren,
and
right?
Helen Mirren.
Are we going to see them taking laps in the mall with you and your walkers or what?
You know what? I think we should build a special event around it. But the production company is leasing out our Civic Center. So some of the events that were scheduled at the Civic Center need to be rehomed. We are going to take on some of those events here. The call center, they mm-hmm. are going to actually sublease their space to the production company for offices. But one of the exciting things we were planning today is the November election needs to be rehomed, and we are going to put them in the old department store.
You know, it's so funny. It occurs to me that you are, and look, we've been talking on and off for a number of years, but you are, and you run a place that is incredibly civic-minded, whether it's the walkers or rehoming the Civic Center events. It's a community space almost, right? Not to get too carried away about it.
It is. It's, well, we are very civic minded, but you know what? We belong to our community, you know.
Yep. No, look, I appreciate that. But let me ask you the fairly pointed business question, which is the Butte Plaza Mall is a for-profit operation. You have to have tenants in there. You have to have consumers coming in and making money. And as you know, the economy is getting a little squeezed. There's a lot of inflation. And I wonder what your concern is in the sort of short to medium term economic future as a woman who, you know, runs a place that depends on people coming in and shopping.
You're right. We still have to be real about it all. Inflation is kind of scary. It's terrifying, I'm going to say. And I know that the Fed bumped up interest rates. That is going to affect credit card spending for a lot of people. Butte, Montana, though, we're not a big credit card user. A lot of people pay cash. We're stocked very well. So the supply chain has, in our world, has stabilized. Our stores and businesses have been doing very well. But, you know, let's be real. We take it day by day.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is we've been talking for, I don't know, 5-6 minutes, whatever. Neither one of us has said pandemic yet. Are you guys over that now, pretty much?
No. We're actually, to be fair, we're in an uptick right now. But we are adapting for that as well. We would not dare to say we're going to normalize this. But we are going to have to live with it because we have to maintain forward motion. Mm-hmm.
Well, I will let you get back to hobnobbing with the Hollywood types that have come up there to Butte and taken over the whole town. Alana Furco, she's a manager of the Butte Plaza Mall in Butte, Montana. Alana, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Stay healthy. Thanks, Kai.
Coming up.
I can tell you that it was a really good learning experience.
Maybe a little painful, though, I think, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. Oh, interesting. Interesting. I don't know. I don't know about the Wawa's today. Dow Industrial's down 741, 2.4%, 29,927. Here's the Wawa's. NASDAQ plunged 453 points, just over 4%, 10,646. The S&P 500 dropped 123. That's points. 3.25 is the percent. Finished at 36.66. Just heard from Samantha Fields about housing. So some homebuilder stocks. Toll Brothers and D.R. Horton both fell 6.3%. Lennar lost about 6.5%. Revlon has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Company cited supply chain problems and an inability to meet consumer demand. Revlon slid 13.3% today. Other cosmetics, Coty sank 7.1%. Bond prices were up. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 3.21%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. If you watched or listened to the January 6th committee hearing today, you'll know there was a whole lot of talk about the Constitution. And if you didn't watch or listen, well, there was a whole lot of talk about the Constitution. And we are going to do a little bit of that here, specifically Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8, to wit, Congress shall have the power to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Copyrights, in other words, and for us today, patents. Since the very first patent was granted in 1790, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has issued more than 11 million others. And just maybe our patent system is a victim of its own success because there are long, long waits to get patents approved and related patent examiners who are completely jammed up. Marketplace's Andy Euler has that one for us.
Austin native Cameron Gibson didn't set out to be an inventor. He just had a passion.
I grew up a music fan, lived here in Austin, Texas my whole life, started teaching myself guitar and music production in college.
About 8 years ago, that passion led to an idea for an app.
A consumer platform that basically was built after what Bleacher Report had done in the sports world. So they personalized content to individual teams.
Gibson wanted to personalize content for users according to their musical tastes with an app called Jamfeed.
It's a system and method for consolidating and aggregating content, and then aggregating that content, analyzing it. So who is this content about? Can we tag it to a specific artist or a band or a festival? And then where does that content go to?
Now, this is exactly the kind of idea that the patent system is supposed to protect. So Gibson paid a little less than $1,000 to file the idea with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the USPTO, in February of 2014. Then he waited and waited before getting U.S. patent number 10,944,845 in March of 2021, 7 years later.
A lot of that is due to the fact that we didn't have the cash to expedite like a lot of big companies.
In other words, Jamfeed could have paid an additional $1,000 or so to get its patent application to jump the queue. But Gibson was already paying his lawyers tens of thousands of dollars to handle the application, which is common, and he couldn't spend more. So we waited. Mike Moyer, a law professor at Boston University, says all that waiting is a problem, especially for startups.
You know, you might get startups that try and fail dealing with a patent headache. Eventually another startup will come along, or maybe a big tech firm will do what the failed startup couldn't do. So I think the costs with the patent system are associated with delay.
Critics say those delays start with overworked patent examiners. According to Melissa Wasserman at the University of Texas Law School, on average, an examiner looks at an application for about 19 hours. That's everything: reading the application, researching to make sure it's novel and isn't obvious, and going back and forth with attorneys on the legal language.
So it's not a lot of time when you think about it. And sort of the patent examiners we've spoken to have repeatedly stated they think they need more time to do a good job.
The Patent and Trademark Office declined a request for an interview, but in a statement, a spokesperson said on average, examiners spend 25 hours per application, and that the average patent is granted in 2 years or less. But that includes patents whose applicants paid for expedited handling. Now that Jamfeed finally has its patent in hand, Cameron Gibson says the company can finally protect its intellectual property. He says there are multiple platforms who are using Jamfeed's patented technology to do the same thing his app does.
We would be very open to a licensing deal. If, let's say, you know, best case scenario, we get, $1 million a year. That's no equity. That's not debt. That's revenue.
He says at that point, the money he spent to get the patent and the 7 years of waiting would have been absolutely worth it. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
So let's talk about borrowing money, right? Which, as we know, is getting more expensive as the Fed raises rates. If you or I want to borrow, we apply for a loan, the bank has a look at our creditworthiness, and we get the money. Or we don't. School districts kind of work the same way. If they've got a big ticket item, they want to add a building or put in new AC or build a new science lab or something, they go to the debt markets. They sell bonds. And when school districts do that, their bonds get rated by one of the big credit rating agencies. The better the rating, the more creditworthy the district is, the lower the interest rate they have to pay. And generally, school districts have pretty good credit. But a new report out this week from Fitch, one of the aforementioned rating agencies, says that after dealing with the pandemic, schools have some new things to worry about it when it comes to borrowing money. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that.
One reason school district debt is considered a good bet is that school funding from state and local governments is stable. Ashley Gaberish is a director at the credit agency Fitch Ratings and author of that new report.
States within their own constitutions have an educational mandate.
So if you lend money to a school, it's probably, you know, good for it. But part of Gaberish's job is to consider both the revenue and costs schools have and how that affects their creditworthiness. And she says schools are facing a whole bunch of new costs, like teachers who want to get paid more and are willing to walk if they don't.
We had this pandemic that threw in a ton of other variables, including people rethinking what they wanted their workplace to look like and voting essentially with their feet.
Gaberish says that schools have to do more to compete with the private sector in order to keep teachers in the classroom, and that can include building better classrooms. Janelle Kubinick is chief administrative officer at the education nonprofit WestEd.
What bonds can pay for is changes in conditions, right? So, you know, you can upgrade facilities and put in new laboratory spaces that attract students and make it better for teaching.
And attracting students is another concern. Miami-Dade County Public Schools is the fourth largest district in the country. Still, enrollment has gone down in the last couple of decades, and each student gone means less revenue. Ron Steiger is chief financial officer there. He says he's not worried about the district's good credit rating.
However, that doesn't mean that I'm not concerned that if we continue to lose enrollment on the district side, that we're not going to have to make really hard decisions.
Like reducing the number of teachers. And taking out a bond to build a science lab isn't so important if you don't have the science teachers to run it. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
After a real, real rough couple of years, tourism is coming back, in some cases and in some places with a vengeance. But obviously, not everywhere. Tiana Yellowhair runs Tatanka Res Tours. That's a native-owned and operated business highlighting the heritage of the Lakota people. We talked to her back in the before times, and we called her back up the other day to get an update.
So, since the last time we spoke, business on our end for my family has been very interesting, and it's been a long journey. I run or co-own with my father Tatanka Res Tours here on Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, and our mission and I guess our vision statement is to educate visitors from all parts of the world the importance of our history, culture, language, past and current situations here on Pine Ridge as well. Our biggest challenge was, because our reservation was closed to visitors, how do we continue doing or fulfilling our mission? And that was our biggest issue. So we had a family friend who said, you know, there's something I want to try. And so he suggested, let's do some online presentations. And that's kind of how we got started with the idea of 90-minute presentations. We've been back in person since, I believe, last June. We haven't had anything online since, but I can tell you that it was a really good learning experience, but it was also very rewarding for not only my family, but also our viewers at that time. I guess that journey of, you know, the lifeline that my family, my children, you know, that they depend on this as a business. We have since we last spoke, we actually have some really exciting news. We have added some things to our business that we're really looking forward to. And so within the next 2 years, 2 to 5 year span, Tatanka Res Tours, initially, we want to be a full-on bread and breakfast. That's our dream and goal. The other aspect is, initially, we want to take the cultural sensitivity tour guide training to the next level. We want to be able to employ tour guides, right? Native tour guides, to give them a sense during the summer of what working life is, but also, you know, this is something that they could end up wanting to make a business out of in the future.
Tiana Yellowhair, she and her dad own Tatanka Res Tours. That's on the Pine Ridge Reservation. This final note on the way out today, a boost economically perhaps, but a hazard for parents of little kids. Lego says it's going to spend $1 billion to build its first factory here in the United States. Chesterfield County, Virginia, just south of Richmond, is the locale. The company says it's looking to shorten supply lines to its biggest market. Do spare a thought, though, for parents walking unsuspectingly barefoot through the house and the sharp agony of stepping on those little pieces. All righty, here is your moment of economic context. Should you happen to be in the market for an EV, which, as it happens, I am, and I'll guess a lot of you are, Tesla said today it's raising prices by as much as $6,000, depending on the model. Yeah. All right, Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Yes, I know there are other EV companies besides Tesla. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.